This week on Across the Aisle, Anthony and Ben wrap up Summer 22's film season with 10 movies that resonated with them or drew their ire. They are known to disagree vehemently at times. Part 1 of Across the Aisle is brought to you by Essentially Cinema and The Movie Review. Here are your hosts. I'm Ben Callimer of The Movie Review and The Cinema Files, based in Phoenix.
And I'm Anthony Francis, across the aisle from Ben, of the movie, the East Coast side of The Movie Review and Screen Comment. And we are the resident critics for each. We're here to do a wrap up, a roundup. We're going to do this once a month for you. And we're going to take a look at the films. You have read our reviews and we want you to hear us talk about them in real time. And I think that'd be interesting for you guys and fun for us as well.
Absolutely. We don't often get time to talk about current films in a podcast format. Our discussions have been centered around films from prior years who happen to be celebrating anniversaries or are culturally insignificant, culturally important or significant. And I'm excited about this opportunity
I am too. And I'm glad we're gonna do a 2-month catch up here because we just started the idea. But from now on, towards the end of every month, beginning of the following month, we're gonna do a show like this where we do a quick roundup and just talk about all, like I said, all the movies in real time. And I think it's going to be great. I've been looking forward to this one a lot.
Absolutely.
And tonight we're going to do June and July. We didn't want to go back too far. June and July is a good spot.
Well, my memory is not good enough to go beyond June. So
I'm no. Lucky if my memory goes beyond today.
Fair enough.
Is it strange to think the way we're doing it, the summer kicked off with a David Cronenberg film? Is that a weird way to look at it?
No, actually, the film divided audiences.
Did it. And Cronenberg fans.
Yeah, let's be frank about that. But Cronenberg's Crimes of the Future, and if I'm not much mistaken, it premiered at Cannes.
Premiered at Cannes. Did well there.
Yeah.
And came to the States, limited release, didn't do well.
No.
Divided critics and fans. And we only briefly talked about the movie. You saw it before I did. I remember, Ben, you sent me a text because I told you I was out of the movie. And you said, well, brilliant. And I was like, well. and I preface this with saying Cronenberg, I believe, is one of the great filmmakers. There's nobody like him.
No.
Like him, loathe him, whatever. You'll never, no matter what one you choose, any Cronenberg movie you watch, you'll never have seen anything like it.
That's true.
And Crimes and Misdemeanors. That's also a very good Woody Allen movie, but that's 89. We won't go back that far. We'll be here all night.
Right.
Crimes of the Future, the Cronenberg film of 2022. It's the same way. I mean, it's just the body horror is still there. But it's different. It's more. Plot wise is more towards his film Existence, which I like. I liked Crimes of the Future. I liked it very, very much. I didn't love it. I had a few problems with it, but you go ahead, Ben.
I actually really liked it. And I think that goes back to the fact that I haven't seen many of his films. From the past, right. We explored The Fly last year, and we had an opportunity to interview one of the production's staff members.
I think that Cronenberg is very creative here. I think Viggo Mortensen is exceptional in his role.
I agree. Mortensen, he can't be bad, I think.
No, and actually this is the first Mortensen film of two that we're going to be discussing on this episode.
Oh, that's right.
But I felt that it dropped off just a little bit between the second and the third act.
I agree completely.
When I felt that Cronenberg was using his, relying on his motifs.
Yeah.
Because he really didn't reinvent himself as much as came back to the screen after what I think was a long absence.
It was a long absence. Yeah.
And he really didn't reinvent himself. You know how some directors take a break and they come back and they've completely reinvented themselves. And Cronenberg didn't exactly do that here, but he has such strong themes in his films. I can't remember if I've seen Existenz, but I know I've seen The Fly. I know I've seen Scanners.
This would also, I would also throw along with Existenz, Crimes of the Future is also in the Videodrome universe, if you saw that.
Yeah.
those three films are very similar.
Yeah. I am recommending this movie if you haven't had a chance to see it.
I am too. I thumbs up from me, if you will. We can't do that, but positive review from me. I've always liked the bleakness of his movies. I think he does it as well as anyone, if not he's the best bleak filmmaker, but that's not to say his movies are bleak and boring. he has comments about society that he throws in, and he's like myself. He's very cynical about society and where we're headed and what we're doing to ourselves. And that's where the bleakness comes in, because he never offers up happy endings or ways that society can change themselves.
Crimes of the Future is definitely a cynical film.
Yeah. Self-annihilation is probably best describes a lot of the characters in most of his films. Yeah.
Yeah. I have to say, as a character and as an actor, Viggo Mortensen really transformed the character throughout the film, his arc.
Really
transformed him. The technical work, the camera work was good. A lot of the film was shot at night, which is not easy to capture.
Douglas Koch, great work, cinematographer.
The editing, I think, was on par. Right.
I was just going to say, we can't leave out Carol Spear's production design.
Even amid bleakness, you still need effective set design and set decoration. And I think that team acquitted themselves exceptionally well.
I agree. And I will say this, and then I want to ask you a question about it.
Yeah.
I will say Viggo Mortensen and David Cronenberg they've done what? This is their fifth movie together?
I think so.
For me, they're with what they're doing. They're right up there with De Niro, Scorsese, De Niro, DiCaprio.
Yep.
Help me. I know there are others, but those are the big go-tos for everyone.
Yeah.
They're great together. And I think mostly they do some of their best work when they work with one another.
Yeah. I think when a director and an actor can find each other's nuances. You think about Scorsese, I think you already mentioned this, Scorsese and De Niro.
Yeah.
When you can find each other's nuances and read each other really well, it's going to make for a very effective story to be told on the screen. And you're not going to doubt the temerity of that pair, of one of those pairings, and come out the other side of a movie and question why those two ever worked together in the first place. You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And even in the few times that Cronenberg has failed me cinematically, and I've never fully hated any of his movies, but in the few times that I haven't loved them, excuse me, he's still interesting. And with this film, I work on a 4-star scale. I only gave it 3, but I never looked away. I don't wear a watch. I never looked at my watch, if you know, just for the phrase. I was never uninterested. I was always interested. And let me ask you the question I had for you.
Yeah.
I can't say what it is, but the final moment, the final shot, final yes. moment, what yes. he wants out of that. I think it doesn't work because he, for a pretentious way to say it, dramatically threw up his hands about a half an hour before that. And I don't think it what he's reaching for in that final shot hits to me. I just wondered if you thought it hit.
I remember it hitting for me, but not having as profound an impact as the other. You know, you take The Fly as an example. That ending shot is remarkable, and Cronenberg built up to it. I don't think its punch was as effective in Crimes of the Future.
Exactly,
but I certainly understand and agree. I guess I'm agreeing with myself, but I understand why Cronenberg ended it the way he did. And
I understand it, but I just think because of I can't say on Mike, but there's a point for me where it just stops, and then there's 20 more minutes to go, and then that end moment, which I can't speak about, didn't for me give me what Cronenberg was trying to do with that shot.
I thought it did because of Scott Speedman's character, but more about Lea Seydoux's Caprice.
Yeah, she was great.
Yep. And you know, I think Seydoux carried Saul, Viggo Mortensen's character, through to the finish line, but I don't think the connection between Caprice and Saul was strong enough to...
I agree with that, because there's a moment, another one we can't speak about yet, where that should have been more, and you'll know what I mean on this one, been more emotional and erotic than it was.
Yes.
And that didn't work either, because they were so... But still, I mean, look, I don't think he can make a bad film, Cronenberg. I think it's impossible for the man. I think even though I wanted another Cronenberg, because he was returning to form, if you will, after doing a couple different types of films.
Yes.
I still think it was provocative. It was unnerving at times. It was always absorbing.
Yes.
Nice commentary on where we are now with our own Mother Earth.
Absolutely. And we can't forget about Kristen Stewart's Tim Lin.
All right, I don't remember her character name, but she was great too. She's really, I'm telling you, I said this in my review of Spencer.
Yes.
That was a becoming for me. And look, I've never been on the Stewart hate bandwagon. She's okay. She never showed range to me.
Right.
Spencer, I called it a becoming, and I stand by that now. I've seen two of her films since, and she is just something about doing Spencer really opened it up for her.
Yeah.
Her time isn't a lot on this film. Her moment, and you'll know what I'm talking about, by the window with Mortensen, has some erotic punch to it.
Yes, it does.
I like that a lot. Yeah. No, we're both recommending the film. You're recommending it stronger than I am.
Yeah, I wouldn't go so far as to highly recommend it.
Yeah.
But I am recommending it because I think Cronenberg found his creative center once again. Yeah.
He never lost it, but yeah, I get it.
Well, you'd mentioned that he'd gone off and done a couple of different.
Well, other I was just talking about History of Violence, A Dangerous Method was basically a film play. I loved both of those. And Eastern Promises, of course, you know. I just meant he was returning to the body horror that.
Return after 20 some odd years of an absence behind the camera. I don't know that I would feel rusty as if I were in his shoes. I don't know that I'd feel rusty, but it's also about trying to find the center of the film. And right. I think he landed a little left of his normal center.
You might be right. I agree. No, I do. You are right. Yeah. It's a little left. Like he caught the ball, but he almost dropped it. If that right. makes sense. That's, I don't know sports. I don't like sports. I just use a sports reference. You're welcome.
Your analogy was on point.
And just very quickly, I just want to throw it out there that his last movie, I think, was 2014, Maps to the Stars. But the point of both of us was that he's been doing like dramatic stuff, different types. Yeah. It's been, it's certainly been 20 years since he did body horror stuff. A recommendation. We both recommend it. You a little stronger, but neither of us are like it's one of the best of the year.
Right.
Yeah.
Our next film is Jurassic World Dominion.
Do we have to?
Yeah, we probably should. I've got to tell you, I did not feel dominated by this film. I was probably dominated to want to leave the theater in the middle of the movie.
I tell you, folks, I'm going to pre-apologize because we're going to go through about three or four here in a row almost that I'm going to be a grumpy pants on. But continue, sir.
You excel so well at being grumpy pants.
I do, and here it comes, baby.
Jurassic World Dominion is the third in the JW trilogy. Chris Pratt returns. Bryce Dallas Howard returns. The movie is set in the in what would be our future. The dinosaurs have been let loose to roam the earth of their own accord, and they live side by side with humans. This film interestingly brings back the Jurassic Park trilogy, which next year it turns 30 years old, if I'm not mistaken.
You are correct. 93.
And Laura Dern as Ellie, Jeff Goldblum as Ian, and Sam Neill as Alan Grant make an appearance in the film. I could not recommend Jurassic World Dominion. And I hear that the Blu-ray / UHD DVD that's coming out is adding a further 14 minutes to its already.
Oh, great news.
A lengthy 2-hour and 26-minute runtime.
Oh my Lord.
You know, I give Colin Trevorrow props for Jurassic World. I might not have completely liked the origin film of the current trilogy. What worked about Jurassic Park was that the three lead characters all had a sense of purpose, and you had somebody like I'm going to muck this up. Richard Attenborough's John Hammond.
John Hammond.
You had somebody like John Hammond to balance out the awe that these three characters were experiencing as they see something recreated in a lab from 65 million years ago.
Spared no expense.
Right, right. And interestingly enough, they spared no expense in making Jurassic World Dominion. But
they did not. They certainly did not.
It doesn't come across on the screen because locusts become the center of this film, and eventually it brings the three main characters from the Jurassic World series together with the three main characters from Jurassic Park. And what you end up having is a morass of main lead characters, not necessarily competing. I think that's the one thing that I'll give Trevor Out credit for in Dominion. They don't compete, but they don't balance each other out because they're all running for their lives, trying to save Isabella Sermon's Maisie character from the evil clutches of the Elon Musk type character at the center of this film, who's trying to dominate the genome structure. And, you know, the story is easy enough to follow along with, and I thought the CGI looked good in certain parts, but overall, I can't recommend Jurassic World Dominion.
No, I'm sorry. I was asleep while you were describing the plot.
here I thought your silence was indicating agreement with me.
I'm gonna have to agree with you there, Ben. I didn't like this film. It will probably find its way, maybe, because I only do five when I do my worst films of the year at the end of every year. Everything you said, I was just sitting there. Check. Yep, that sounds right. Yep, that's exactly it. And I won't spend a lot of time, or I'll just be, and then I hated this and this, right? And me, you know. But what I was noticing when you were describing the plot,
yes,
I said, oh yeah, that's right. But yeah, because I tell you, I saw the movie. It's what, 2.5 hours almost, or whatever.
Yeah.
And I don't care how long a movie is. You can be 5 hours, just interest me and give me things that are going to keep me interested, focused. It zipped by. You do not feel the running time.
Right.
And my main problem is, as soon as I walked out, it was kind of like coming out of a 2-day coma. Like, wait, what just happened? I swear. Right. I saw something about dinosaurs, and there was a motorcycle. We might have been in Malta at one point. I don't know.
Yes, we were.
He just throws everything with no. The editing is atrocious.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying this for effect. I mean this on this particular film. I've seen better edited Michael Bay films. It's just.
Lot.
Yeah, it really does. And sorry, Colin, but yeah. I mean it's literally images being thrown at us. He does nothing. I mean, he does things, but nothing interesting to me with the new crew. And with the new crew, he's trying to do stuff. He completely the old crew or sorry reverse that with the old cast from the original.
Yeah.
He's trying to do so much stuff that doesn't work, in my opinion, that the new cast from the Jurassic World films, they're just kind of standbys, and they only come when they're needed. And Chris Pratt is stone-faced through the whole thing. I think he was on a motorcycle at some point. He went down an alley. something might have been chasing him, could have been a dinosaur. I can't recall. That, I mean, look, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this because there's other movies I need to be grumpy about this summer.
Right.
But it's a flash of images. The thought is put into the design of the creatures, and you said sometimes the CGI isn't the best and sometimes it's excellent.
Yep.
By now, in a movie like this, it should be consistently excellent. It's just a flash of images to me. I truly hated this film. I hated the first one. I almost liked the second one. I think I hate this one worse than the first one. I really do. Like, it's just an awful, awful, to me, an awful, awful film. There's just so, I could use a show telling you what I don't like about it.
Right.
I don't like it. Images, headache, over. I want some more popcorn.
I will say that there is one redeeming quality about this movie.
Laura Dern.
Well, Laura Dern's character is probably the strongest element in the film, but even that's not enough to say.
I was going to say, I thought she was terrible. I just mean her being around makes me happy.
Right, yeah. Right. But I mean, if you really look at the story, Laura Dern's character is prominent, front and center. And, you know, I think she makes the film bearable. But even her character isn't strong enough. It wasn't developed enough to really be effective. But from a technical perspective, the sound mix on this movie is off the charts. And, you know, even if you're not interested in film and you want modern demo material when it comes out on ultra high definition Blu-ray, this movie will kick your home theater's ass when it comes to bass sound movement across the field. I'm getting geeky here in terms of technical prowess, but my point is that if there's one singular reason to own this movie on home video when it comes out, I think in September or later this month, it's going to be the sound mix as demo material. But
now I'm going to call you out on that.
Okay.
I'm going to do it because this is the fun part. You're telling people to buy a film for its sound. You know, there's nothing else to recommend it. I mean, listen to your own review there. There's nothing else you're recommending it for.
No, nope.
You're saying if you want to buy it for the sound. That should tell you how good of a movie this is.
Right, exactly. No.
And I'm saying buy it for the sound. Don't do it, folks.
Well, there are home theater people who have invested.
No, I know.
Yeah, there are people who have invested a lot of money in their home theater. And
I've invested a lot of money in my home theater. but a little comedy for the folks.
Hey, at least I didn't my way through that.
Right. That was funny. People. Laugh it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I certainly was when I was talking about this movie after I saw it. No, two quick things I do want to hit.
Yeah.
You mentioned the character of Ellie from the original. That's two places where I found the film dropped the ball on the screenplay, or the two main major, because the whole screenplay dropped the ball.
Right.
The three characters, Ellie, Ian, and Alan, they've been established.
Right.
All you have to do is pick it up and carry it over here. They failed at characters that were already established. Now,
The movie didn't make me care about the three characters or why they were even there.
Exactly. And my God, we feared for them every second in the original.
Yes.
The second place I thought the movie dropped the ball, and you mentioned it earlier. I love this film about dinosaurs. Oh, locust. That's going to be the big. Oh, okay.
Right.
and it just went on and on with the locust, on and on and on. And I'm like, well, call it Day of the Locust. Don't call it that. There's a good movie called Day of the Locust, but I'm done. I hate it. That's enough.
Yeah.
That's enough from me. I mean, if you have more.
Well, I actually, my turn to ask you a question. You have a son, and
I do have a son,
and I think he liked Jurassic World Dominion.
No, He loved Jurassic World Dominion.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, no, he loved it. And look, yeah, I know where you're going. Yes, that was worth the price of admission.
Yeah.
And it's so fun to watch my son beam about, oh my God, you didn't like the scene where the blah, 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 you know, and it's, and the, yes, that's wonderful. If your parents take your kids to it.
Yeah.
If they like it, buy it. Don't buy it for any other reason. I don't care how good. Guess what? The picture is going to look good too. Don't do
right.
it. Don't do it.
It will, but you know, there are times where I've been so pissed off at a movie, which doesn't happen very frequently, but I've been so pissed off at a movie, but the technical achievement behind the movie really impressed me. Yeah. Yeah.
No, it frustrated you, you said?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, when you were in the theater.
Yeah. Yeah. Jurassic World Dominion frustrated me. And
me too.
We are not recommending it.
We are not. This is not a recommendation. I don't know if you could tell, folks. I don't care for it. And hold on to your popcorn, folks. Our next movie, if Ben and I are on the same list here, I'm going to get even more mad. Very quickly, because I know we don't have all night. I am a huge, huge fan of the man they call Elvis. You want to go, Ben? Because I don't want to start off negative.
No, go ahead.
Okay. Go ahead. Well, anyway, as it stood and still stands for me, I think the best, the most dramatically complete film, dramatically complete and successful film about Elvis is John Carpenter's 1978 version with Kurt Russell, who was formerly my favorite performance as Elvis. Now, along comes Baz Luhrmann. I'll admit it, a filmmaker I don't admire. But hey, Elvis, it looked like a big project. The notices were good. It was a big hit at Cannes Film Festival. So, and we're critics, so we kind of have to see these things. I saw Elvis. I don't like Elvis, Ben. This is the one I'm going to get a little mad on. I'm watching a movie. What's that?
Get it out. Get it out.
I need one of those dolls. I hate, like a pillow. I hated you. You treated me bad as a kid. Why? That's the way. That's, and I'm looking at Baz Luhrmann's face when I do it. It is just offensive. And you know what? Even if you're not an Elvis fan, it should be offensive. Just the way he should look. I go into a Baz Luhrmann movie. I know what I'm gonna see, but I thought, you know, this big fantasized cinematography surrounding the legend of Elvis. I just hated it. It was okay for a minute. And I think the way this man directed the film is offensive and wrong. And I'm so, I know Priscilla Presley and Lisa Presley both praised Butler. I don't know about the film. We'll get to Butler in a second. But I just thought Elvis was the flashy camera work, and he never let him sing a full song because Baz Luhrmann has his, you know, oh, I got to get my camera swooning. He never sang a full song until the wonderful final, what is it, 15 minutes where he's in Vegas?
Yeah.
If the whole film could have been as emotional and powerful as that final 15 minutes, it would have been one of the best films of the year.
Yeah.
Instead, Luhrmann decides to, it's offensive in two ways. Luhrmann plays rap music, mixes it in with Elvis's songs while we're watching Elvis go to the black section of town. Like, boss, yeah. That's a little, why? Just because it's black folk? And why are we seeing or hearing rap music in it. It was a ridiculous choice. I mean, just the whole, to me, it's an, and I am, folks, and Ben, I am in the minority. I know I am. This thing is praised up and down. I might have called it a travesty in my review. I really think the way Luhrmann overdirects just killed it here. I'll just hit quick bullet points because my mind is racing. The focus to be on Colonel Tom Parker and have him narrate the film was a bad idea. Even if the film was good, that's a bad idea. Tom Hanks as Parker did not work for me. His makeup was bad. His delivery was bad. I was laughing out loud every time he, you know, greatest show on earth, you know, and his eyes would get all big and he's got that fake hook nose. And oh my God. I mean, it didn't work. None of it worked. I think the whole movie was doomed when they decided Baz Luhrmann to direct it. You know, one thing I'll give him besides that last 15 minutes, which I will say, wonderful. Because he lets the camera sit and we focus on the man and his music.
Yeah,
I will say, even though he blows it, he gets almost more intricate than any film has, touches closer to than any previous Elvis film has on the full influence of Black musicians on Elvis. And then he blows it by just these ridiculous song choices and, you know, the Black performers that he interacts with, including B.B. King, etc. They're just there as caricatures and a memory, which I guess is the way Luhrmann's designing his film.
Yeah.
They go into the controversy, but that's glossed over. His relationship with his mother really upset me. She was his rock, and it really, I didn't get that from I like the actress who played her. I believe Helen Thompson. I don't know if I'm right about that. But she wasn't given enough to do except look longingly, hug him, and then die. Priscilla didn't do much for me. She was actually a afterthought. I hated every minute of this movie except the last 15 minutes, and I'll wrap up my brutally negative review. I hate this film. That said, Austin Butler, I'm pulling for him to win the Oscar. Previously, Russell was the best Elvis performance. I have never seen anything like, as far as an Elvis performance, what Butler does with his eyes, with his face, with his movement, with his hands, of course, his hips and legs. It's a phenomenal performance. I promise, I try not to do hyperbole. I put this up, I'm not saying it's as great as, I'm talking dedication. I put it up with De Niro and Raging Bull. I mean, this actor, you know, Charlize Theron and Monster, Butler morphs into Elvis, and Butler is no more. It is Elvis. I was skeptical when I saw the trailer. From the second he's on screen in this film, he is Elvis. And to the very end, he's even more Elvis. I mean, he pulls off that last 15 minutes because the camera is right on his face through an almost entire song. I am ecstatic about how great his performance is. It is so good that when it drops down to $6, $7, $8, maybe $15, I might buy Elvis just so I can fast forward every few years. and I'm serious, and watch his incredible performance. It is incredible. The film, garbage to me. The performance so far, the performance of the year, one of the best of this decade. I love Butler. I hate the film.
Butler is probably one of the reasons why I'm recommending the movie. I thought his performance was magnetic. From when we first see him on the screen until the last 15 minutes.
Oh my God.
He captures your attention and draws you in.
It's Elvis.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. But right. But let me qualify that further to say, I came out of this movie not really knowing who Elvis Presley was.
Well, you knew who he was.
The individual. I was aware of his performances. I've listened to his music.
Yeah. You're just talking about it as a man.
Yes. Yeah.
This doesn't help you that much.
No, but I think it gives a foundation on which I can build because definitely. There's interest in, you know, learning more about him. And that's all praise to Austin Butler and his performance. I thought Tom Hanks did an admirable job.
We viciously disagree there.
Right. But, you know, I didn't even know who Colonel Tom Parker was before the movie came out. So
you didn't get a little grin on your face though at like the 11th or 12th time he'd walk right up with those big eyes, greatest show on us.
It did get a little ingratiating towards the end of the film. You were right on Helen Thompson as Gladys Presley. I thought Richard Roxburgh, who, if I'm not mistaken, is an Australian actor.
I think Thompson might be, and Baz Luhrmann is Australian.
Yes, yeah.
Roxburgh's been in two of his other movies as well.
Yep, as Vernon Presley, I thought, you know, the roles were window dressing.
Exactly. Yeah, very well put.
But I thought that they did good jobs for what they were asked to do and how they came out at the end of the film.
They did something good with absolutely nothing.
Yes, absolutely.
That's my opinion.
Absolutely. The movie runs a little long for me. It's 2 hours and 39 minutes, and you probably wished that it only had lasted a minute, but then we wouldn't have gotten enough of Austin Butler, would we?
No, we wouldn't. And I would argue 15 to 20 minutes, because that last, I'm telling you, that finale had me it had me all the way to, if the whole film would have been that good, this would have been one of the best biopics I had ever seen.
There's another scene that I think rivals for me and the end sequence, and that's when Elvis is in the TV studio doing the Christmas special.
That is a good sequence, but again, for me, it is absolutely ruined by the ridiculous, and I know it's supposed to be ridiculous, Tom Hanks running back and forth. Back and forth. What? He's doing what? And he's running.
The strength of that scene, though, is Austin Butler as Elvis.
Oh, when he starts singing? Yeah.
Yes.
The comeback special. Yeah, no, that's a good moment, but they keep cutting away because Luhrmann does not have the patience as a filmmaker, as we all know by now.
Right.
To just sit and let something happen. You can zip around later. Let him have this moment.
Right. Well, I think it builds up to that final sequence that you've become enamored with. But for me, where it's where the movie picks up steam and genuine interest in the character of Elvis, rather than it being a mundane blow by blow of certain events in his life, as
I agree with that, yeah.
remembered from Tom Hanks's Tom Parker,
Colonel Tom Parker,
his vantage point. So even though I'm recommending the movie, because again, it's giving me a nice launch pad, and it's nice to finally see the industry rags start promoting Butler for the best actor race. That's only that's happened great. in the past couple of days. He is singularly Elvis is this is a movie about Elvis. And so to have such a strong performer anchoring technical nightmare of a film in terms of editing, I agree with you there. To have such a strong performance anchoring the movie really pivots Elvis back into the limelight in a way that I haven't seen in a very long time from any type of movie.
You are right. And I'm glad that you said that about the editing and his performance. He, with the way Luhrmann edits, for Butler to rise above all of that, is credit to his craft. Seriously.
Absolutely.
It's a phenomenal performance. I'll tell you what the movie was not. It was not the greatest show on earth.
So,
and for all of you fans of the movie, I'm sorry, and I hope I made you laugh with the Tom with the overdone Tom Hanks lines. Yeah, I'm sorry. So, not a recommendation from me, but a recommendation from you.
Yes, we are split on it.
We are. We've only it's our first split. We got another one coming up.
Yes.
excuse me. I'm sorry, folks.
The next greatest show on earth for me was The Black Phone.
Oh, I'm sorry. Am I smart? I'm kidding, folks. I'm kidding. Look, we're serious, but you got to have fun with it.
And to qualify that, I have never been, when I was a kid, I shied away big time from horror films.
That's exactly what I was about to say. And the ironic thing is, Ben is not a horror aficionado. And Anthony is. Yeah.
Right. And this movie really, really, really piqued my interest. I thought Ethan Hawke did a great job as the grabber. But I think the movie's strengths are in Mason Thames' Finney and Madeline McGraw's Gwen.
Did you open that door for me?
I did.
We don't disagree to mammoth levels much. Like, even on Elvis, we right. disagree, but we agreed on this, that, and this.
Yep.
I am if there was a phrase to go farther than the polar opposite and I hate, I'm not a mean guy. I love kids, kid actors. We shouldn't be too harsh on them.
Right.
I am way beyond the polar opposite on these kids. I thought the main kid, I could have cared less about his plight. And I thought the girl who played his sister, she was his sister.
Yeah.
Oh, I just, number one, the main kid didn't emote enough for me.
Right.
I thought he was kind of flat and maybe a little, as a director, maybe you should have, hey, let's bring out a little more. There's a killer. He's coming down the stairs. He just looked like he was waiting for direction. What was the name of the little girl as his sister, the actress?
Madeline McGraw.
Oh, you know what? Best wishes to your future. And I'm sure the success of this film, and it was a small success, will help you, and good luck to you. And I look forward to seeing you hone your craft. I thought she emoted like a kid from a TV sitcom in the 80s, like on Full House or something. I kept waiting for her to look at us and wink like, I thought, I am so sorry. I thought
she did. I do that?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, do I have psychic abilities? Oh, ain't I a stinker? We'll be right back after these messages. Yeah, that's exactly, by the way, I'm looking at an Elvis lamp. I should have looked at it at the last review. That is exactly the reaction I had. I'm like, and this is, I'm just talking in as far as the film character. I'm like,
yeah,
grab her, get in your van, get your balloons. I got another one for you. It was grating. And I'll save my, and you'll know what I'm about to say. I'll save my bad moment. I'll let you get all the good out for the folks, because I am alone on this one. Everybody, critics, audiences, horror fans, non-horror fans, everybody's liking it. So what, you go ahead.
What worked for me was Finny and Gwen's reliance on each other, because they come from a broken home. And mind you, the film is set in the late 70s in Denver. And when you think about it, kids of that age, when you think about our childhoods, we had to rely on friends because our parents were working.
Right.
And so we only had each other and our garden hoses to drink from to rely on each other. And I thought that the story really did a good job of using that as a base for character motivation between the two.
I'll give you that. I did like their walks together.
Yeah. What rubbed me the wrong way was Jeremy Davies' role as Terrence. I understand that he's supposed to be an ugly man. I understand that he's supposed to be a vicious individual. And there's one sequence in the film that I think took it a little too far.
You agree with that?
Yes, I do.
Oh, that was my bad moment I was going to hold on for. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's junk. And I'll say it. That scene, the way it's shot, is junk. Junk. That's the way I feel about it. I'm sorry. It's junk.
From a technical perspective, I would agree with you. But
it's exploitative and junk.
But for its relevance on the story, I think Finney's, one of the things that drives Finney is that he is not a very confident character. And I think that might be why you find the performance flat. And as somebody who has lacked confidence in his life in the past, I could relate to Finney as a character, and making friends as a child was difficult for me. So I found the characters very relatable. I didn't have parents like Jeremy Davies' character.
Me neither, thank Christ.
Right, yeah, right. But I found Finney to be a very relatable character, and I think that's what's driving my recommendation for the film.
How did you feel about the effectiveness of the it's in the trailer, this isn't a spoiler, of the ghost kids?
I thought that at first was really effective, and one of the reasons why is because we meet most of these characters before they become apparitions.
I like that.
Yeah, I do think that it wore a little thin as the movie rolls along.
I thought it was very thin. I think that's an invented premise. I mean, it's in the book. It's based on by Stephen King's son.
Yeah.
But I mean, he blows the director, Scott Derrickson, a director I like a lot.
Yeah.
I've liked every one of his films until this one. I think he blows it and fast, because I mean, the eerie sound of the static, the old-fashioned phone sound, I loved all that.
Yeah.
That was creepy. And that's how it should have stayed.
Yeah.
It would have been chilling. But no, he has to please the younger crowd, I would assume. He shows them. That's not scary. Then they just pop up as a jump scare.
Right. Now I'm startled and I'm out of the aura of the whole thing because you just made me go, oh!
Yeah.
And it doesn't work.
It's funny. At my screening, a fellow critic here in the Phoenix area was sitting behind me, and we get to the tail end of the film, and something is going on screen. I remember what it is, but I won't give it away for those who haven't seen it. By the way, the movie is now on Peacock for subscribers. My fellow critic shouts out at the top of his lungs, "Let him have it!" And I just had to laugh because, the movie, if you allow yourself to be immersed by the horrific elements of the film, it builds up to it. And yeah. I certainly understand your perspective. I have found that as I've gotten into horror films or horror-themed films, that they are more thrillers than they are horrific.
Well, it depends on what one you're watching.
Yes, that's true. That's true. But I'm gonna qualify it real quickly. The reason why I think they are more thrillers than they are horrific is because the news is plastered with horror. Real life horror. And right. So I think I'm desensitized to the fictional horror depicted in real life stories that are converted into a screenplay, that they are more thrillers. And, you know, when we were kids, thrillers had a place, horror had a place.
Yeah.
And they've merged together, and I don't think that they are as effective, but The Black Phone worked for me, and I'm recommending it.
I fully agree that modern horror films are not as effective. And just two more quick thoughts on this film. Ethan Hawke, an actor I love. I have always loved Ethan Hawke. He's a good director. He's a good actor. Great writer.
First Reformed.
That's his best performance, I think. He's fine, but the mask does all the heavy lifting. By the way, the great mask designed by the master Tom Savini.
Yes.
Everybody knows that. It's a wonderful mask. I'd like to own it and put it on my wall down the movie room. It's that cool.
Yeah.
But the mask does the special work there. I mean, when the mask is off, he stares a little and raises eyebrows a little. He just seems kind of lost to me. And I wonder if I'm getting that, if that's true, because I haven't heard anybody else say that. But in an interview, I heard Ethan Hawke say that he turned this film down many times because he didn't think he could play a character like that. And he said during the whole shooting, he was worried if he was pulling it off. I'm wondering if for some reason I channeled in on that and caught it. I didn't hear the interview until after I saw the movie. I'm just saying, I wonder if that's true and somehow we had some kind of psychic connection. I'm being silly there, but you know what I mean.
Right.
Because everybody else is saying he does a great job. I love the man, but I see him struggling in that role.
Well, so, if I'm not much mistaken, this was his first performance as a villain.
His first full-on villain. And what a first one to be, a killer of children. Yeah.
Right. I think I'm giving him a little bit more of a pass because this was his first attempt at a quote unquote bad guy. The mask does more of the heavy lifting than the actor does.
Because the screenplay doesn't give him enough to do. I don't.
Right. Exactly. The actor is very stoic.
I agree.
There's little room for a villain whose primary motivation is a mask to be stoic behind the mask. And when the mask is lifted, it's certainly a struggle, but I thought he was effective enough of a foil against somebody you know, one of the things that I think worked for me was that the character himself was not confident. And so it becomes a battle of wits between somebody finding their confidence and somebody descending into their confidence.
Well, I get it. I just didn't like it. Yeah. So another split vote on the black phone. Ben recommends it. I do not.
You know what I am going to recommend very highly?
Didn't hate the film, though. I want that said. I hated a lot in it. Didn't hate the film. Wait, if we're on the same list, I think I'm going to recommend it very highly as well. Am I right?
Yes.
Am I redeemed here? Folks, well, listen to this one. Go ahead, though.
Well, I think audiences were divided on this one. Certainly critics were divided on it as well. And the film is Nope.
Yep. Woo! I tell you, and I also, not only on this show, I also saw Nope after this string of movies that we've been talking about. And I was all but giving up. And then I'm like, come on, Jordan, do a three-peat.
And he certainly batted a home run.
Oh man, what a great, great entertainment!
Yeah,
it's. I mean, it could have its own show.
Yeah, it could.
We talk about. I'll let you go. Just let me get this out, or I'll lose it because I'm old. We talk about what's missing from Hollywood big budget entertainment. Two things, thought. Three things: thought, creativity, and spectacle. Real spectacle.
And Nope hits on all three themes exceptionally well.
And Jordan Peele got behind the camera and said, "Oh, I hate that Anthony and Ben feel that way. Here, let me do this for you." Thank you, Jordan Peele. Anyway, go on, Ben.
No, I think Jordan Peele continues his homages to classic films. Certainly there's a overarching Steven Spielberg-esque nature to the film. The three lead characters or actors, Daniel Kaluuya.
Wonderful performance.
Yes.
This guy can act. Go ahead. Yep.
Who is making his second appearance in a Peele film.
Exactly. Got nominated for the first one. Maybe it'll happen again.
That would be nice.
I was going to say, I would not bark if that happened.
Steven Yeun and Kiki Palmer. But what I found about what I really enjoyed about this film is that within its inventiveness, is its quirks. It's a very quirky film.
It is.
That uses that quirk to its strength. And advantage.
I agree. I mean, it's not like everybody, modern audiences, and forgive me, folks, if I'm not talking about everyone, but modern audiences, we had Get Out, now we want another Get Out. He said, no, I'm going to give you Us. And they're like, oh, cool. All right, now we want another straight horror film like both of those with cool stuff in it to think about. And he said, nope. I hate to be cliched and hack. That's a hack joke I just did. But he said, no, I want to do spectacle this time. I want you to have a spectacle experience because you don't get it much anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. It's a wonderful film. Very quickly, all the lead players. All right, except for the video guy from the store. I wasn't as enamored of him. But Kaluuya, my God, just what that meant. I said this to you. I said it in my review in print. His performance in this film is almost Kabuki-like. Yeah. He uses movement and body movement, head movement, his eyes. My God, those eyes, Daniel Kaluuya. You have a career forever and beyond.
Yes.
He is just an amazing screen presence, and he's different every time. I'm glad he won the Oscar for Judas and the Black Messiah, which I saw at Cannes earlier this year, I guess. or was it last year? I don't know. Whenever last it was.
Year. Last year.
Yeah, 21. I said then, I'm like, he's got to be nominated. I'm so happy he won for that. And he's equally great here and different. He's different in every film I see him in. I love him. Kiki Palmer is just, she is just a burst of energy in this movie and not annoying energy. She is funny. She's alive. It's a performance that is alive. I love it. Steven Yeun is very controlled performance.
Yes.
But he's got a little, to it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, guys, right? And I like that because he's a showman.
Yes.
And I don't want to talk too much because it's still in theaters and people are still seeing it. But I love the look on his face and his, I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying everybody has a last scene in every movie. In his final moment on film, in that film, the look on his face, wonderful.
Priceless.
He's another actor who constantly challenges himself.
Yep.
I love his work almost every time out. And the great Michael Wincott.
I was just going to mention him.
Doing the Michael Wincott thing, but nobody can do it like Michael Wincott.
No.
Wonderful. And his last moment is great.
Yep.
It's just a phenomenal. Like I said, this could have its own show.
It's
really phenomenal entertainment. It's clever.
Yeah.
I still, people are arguing about it online, and I have the theory that there is no answer to it, that it can't be, that life can't be controlled and some things can't be explained. Everybody's trying to figure out the shoe. I don't know what it means. You don't know. Nobody knows. And I bet you that I'm pretty close. I have to be, because the whole movie is about you. Some things you get, where does the thing come from? It's in the trailer. There's something in the sky.
Yeah.
Where does it come from? Nobody knows. Why is it doing what it's doing? Nobody knows. Can't be explained. Let's just survive it.
I'm going to throw a question out here.
Yes.
Does it really matter?
No, it doesn't. And that's the great thing. It doesn't matter, because the subtext in Us and Get Out is so strong and so powerful and important that there is a little bit of subtext here and there in Nope. But mostly what he wants to do with this one, like, just sit back, chomp on your popcorn and be entertained.
Yeah.
It's a roller coaster ride. That's an overused phrase. Every critic overuses it. I overuse it recently. But that's exactly what it is. You pay your money, you get your treats, and you just have an absolute blast for a little over 2 hours, and you get out of there and you're just happy as a lark. At least I was.
I was immersed within this film.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Peele does a very good job in all three of his films of immersing his audience in the experience. And I think that Nope is his greatest immersion because there are so many questions that you have about story elements. You keep going back to it, you keep thinking about it, and you accept that there aren't answers to your questions.
Yeah, because in this type of film at the hands of another filmmaker, there would be some old crusty scientist with probably either a bad accent or all kinds of ridiculous tics and mannerisms coming in, and I've been following this my whole life. You know, I knew that on this day it would be here. And there's, like you said, there's absolutely no need for this in this film. It would have been out of place. It would have drug the film down a notch or two for me.
Yeah.
I think it's go ahead.
Oh no, I have to chuckle because the mad scientist description that you just gave me reminded me of Irwin Allen's The Swarm and Michael Caine's character.
Oh my goodness gracious. No one should be reminded of Irwin Allen's The Swarm. And I'd like to personally apologize to our listeners for having to drum up that memory. Oh my goodness gracious. But yeah, no, you're right. That's funny.
Michael Caine
is a great actor.
Yes, yes. I don't think we can escape this film without mentioning Keith David.
I don't like that guy. No, he's great. He's a great actor. I've liked him most of my life. Very short, uber important role. And
yes.
And he kills it by seemingly doing nothing.
Yes.
He kills that role, man. He's so good. He's even gets that Keith David smile he gets, you know. I mm-hmm. love it. I love that man. I have since I first saw him. I believe the first time I noticed him was Platoon. That could be his first film.
Wasn't he in The Thing?
Oh yeah, sorry. Oh yeah, that one of my all-time favorite films. Forgot about that one. Yeah. All right, folks. I'm gonna hang up now. I'm turning in my movie card, and I would just like to apologize sincerely.
Hey, I've had to turn my movie card in twice. It's tattered at this point.
And hey, when Stallone did Rambo, I think that was his first movie, right? My goodness gracious. Why are we on a microphone right now?
No, Stallone is too busy arguing with MGM over whether or not he should have rights to Rocky.
Right. Come on, Winkler. Cough it up. Oh, my goodness. Point is, I love Keith David.
You're right. Right. No, I am. I'll say one more thing. And that is that I loved the use of an IMAX camera within the film.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was going to say, yeah, I saw it in IMAX twice. Yes. No, you're right. And that goes back to the great Michael Wincott.
Yeah. But the film in IMAX itself, you know, when you think of Jordan Peele, you don't think of he is a director embracing large format technology because Get Out and Us are very intimate films.
Exactly. Like we said earlier, he's going for spectacle.
Yes. And Nope was a perfect use of the IMAX format.
I agree. I am 100% in agreement.
And still remains the best way to see the film.
I fully agree. I concur with that statement. And I will add to it by saying, pardon me, folks. I'm still choked up about the Keith David comment. oh my goodness. He's one of my favorite actors. Wasn't Nope his first movie? I really think in this film and in his others too, his use of framing is brilliant. And I don't mean that as an overstatement. It's really brilliant. He uses all of his frame in every shot. And you know who does that? John Carpenter. You know who does that? Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah.
Am I saying his films are as great as those? Maybe not, but guess what? Yes, they are in the way they're directed.
Yes.
And as far as thrills, then yes, they are as good as those. I think as a filmmaker, his eye, as a filmmaker, I would compare him to Carpenter and Hitchcock in the way he uses his framing.
Yes.
I stand behind it. But no, it's a superbly crafted film, my friend. It's just wonderful. It's smart. It's funny. It's creepy. Riveting. There's the word I was looking for.
Yep. It is definitely riveting.
It is that. And I have a feeling we're both in full agreement. I don't know if you caught that, folks. That might be even though we're going to agree here a few more times before the end of the show, this might be our biggest agreement. I mean, we are legion in every single solitary thing about this film.
Yep, we're highly recommending Nope.
I think it's one of the best films of the year.
Across the Aisle is brought to you by Essentially Cinema and The Movie Review. join Ben and Anthony as they conclude their summer 22 wrap-up in part 2 of Across the Aisle.